Resolved, that by ratification of the Treaty of Peace with Spain, it is not intended to incorporate the inhabitants of the Philippine Islands into citizenship of the United States, but it is the intention of the United States to establish on said islands a government suitable to the wants and conditions of the inhabitants. This 4th of July, the American people have redeemed the epoch-making pledge given nearly 50 years ago to bring democracy to the people of the Philippine Islands, and when the lesson was learned, to grant them independence. It is the first time in history that any nation has voluntarily granted independence to a people over whom it claims sovereignty.
A tutorship of dependent peoples.
To Commodore George Dewey, commanding American naval forces in Far East. War has commenced between the United States and Spain. Proceed at once to Philippine Islands. Commence operations particularly against the Spanish fleet. You must capture vessels or destroy. Use utmost endeavor. Signed, John D. Long, Secretary of the Navy.
Every American knows the result of those orders. In a naval engagement lasting little more than 3 hours, Dewey's forces entirely destroyed the Spanish Pacific Fleet. By the end of the year, Spain had ceded the islands to the United States, and a new era in American history had begun. To American imperialists, Rudyard Kipling's phrase, "the white man's burden," gave a program and a slogan. But to many thoughtful Americans, imperialism seems economically wrong and morally indefensible.
And I tell you, we have no right whatever to claim sovereignty over the Philippine Islands. We are enslaving the very people we just fought a war to liberate. We must grant the Philippines their independence. Now!
The controversy was long and bitter until finally a commission was dispatched to the islands to make an impartial study of the situation and to report on the readiness of the Filipinos for independence. Their report:
the United States cannot withdraw from the Philippines. We are there, and duty binds us to remain. There is no escape from our responsibility to the Filipinos and to mankind for the government of the archipelago and the amelioration of the conditions of its inhabitants.
The Filipinos are wholly unprepared for independence, and if independence were given to them, they could not maintain it.
There being no Philippine nation, but only a collection of different peoples, there is no general public opinion in the archipelago. But the men of education in general recognize as indispensable American authority, guidance, and protection.
And so, for better or for worse, America committed herself to responsibility for the Philippines until they were able to take that responsibility upon themselves. Few people realized the magnitude of the job we'd undertaken in the Philippines. The Filipinos themselves did not realize it.
What is it?
You are covered, amigo. You will come with us.
What do you want?
You will find out. Come.
Pedro, don't go. They will kill you.
Tell your woman it is she who will be killed unless she stays quietly in the house.
Do not come outside, Maria. I will be all right. I have done nothing.
But
enough.
Pedro.
Close the door and come.
Where are you taking me?
Not far. Just outside your house here. Yes, this will do.
But what do you want?
To punish you, amigo. for your collaboration with the Americans.
But the Americans have freed us from Spain. They are giving us our freedom.
Fool! The Americans did not fight Spain to free us, but to enslave us. Why else are they here? Why else do they refuse us independence now?
They have promised us independence. Already much is being done for our
people. I will not argue with the collaborator. You serve the Americans for money, while your countrymen fight and die. For that you are a traitor, and for that you will be punished. I decree the number 2 punishment. The next time, it will be death.
And this time?
The knuckles of both hands.
No.
Miguel, bring the rocks.
No. No!
It was a people divided against themselves that the Americans undertook to rule. It was a people scattered over more than 7,000 separate islands, divided into many groups, speaking diverse tongues, accustomed to centuries of native and foreign misrule. The entire debris of feudal imperialistic government, of feudal law, of money, landholding, trade, education, and public health had to be swept away, and democratic institutions set up in their place. The problems involved were complex, contradictory, and at times seemed hopeless. Sometimes the Americans did not foresee the results of their own acts. They ordered free elections of regional native governors, but...
Keep moving. This way. Drop your ballots in the box.
Please?
Si.
You are an inspector of the election?
Si, es verdad.
I cannot read, senor. They said you would mark the ballot for me.
Oh, but of course. Whom did you wish to vote for?
For Monreal.
Monreal, surely. You mark a cross in the space here after his name. Like this.
Le gracias, senor. Thank you.
Just a minute there. You put the X after the name of Oroveza. This man wanted to vote for Monreal.
Si, for Monreal.
Oh, for Monreal? I misunderstood. You should put the cross here. So.
Now the ballot is marked twice, and it's worthless. Go get another ballot, senor, and I'll mark it for you.
Illiterate voters made it easy for candidates to bribe election inspectors to mark their names on the ballots of the voters, who could not tell one name from another because they could not read. And once in power, many officials used their positions to enrich themselves. It was only gradually that the Americans could teach them a fundamental principle of democracy, that public office is a public trust. There were two ways to deal with the illiterate voters. One was to put enough American supervisors at the polls to protect them, and the other was to make an end of illiteracy. But in 1900, more than half the population of the Philippines was illiterate. Schools were few in number and poorly attended, taught chiefly religious subjects. There were no standard textbooks available for all the different dialects. The teachers were few, poorly trained, and apathetic.
You sent for me, senor?
Yes, Maria. You were half an hour late to school today.
Yes, senor, but there were so few pupils yesterday, I did not think it would matter.
Maria, don't you realize that unless the teachers are on time, the children cannot be expected to take their school very seriously?
But it seems so hopeless, senor.
Hopeless, Maria. Here's the situation. I go away for 6 days. When I return, only 2 of my 6 teachers are present, and attendance has dropped from 140 to 25. Today, only 1 teacher was on time. You were half an hour late. Francisco was an hour and a half late and came in only because I sent for him. Alberto would not come at all because he wants to attend a cockfight. Haven't any of you a realization of your responsibilities as teachers?
Well, I used to believe I could help my people if I taught them to read and write. But the people do not want to learn. The children do not want it. They ask, what use is reading and writing to a farmer? Can he plow any better for that?
No, he won't be able to plow any better, but he will be a better citizen. That's the message you must take to your people, Maria. In time, very soon perhaps, this country will be a modern nation with modern buildings, roads, and institutions. These islands have a destiny to fulfill, Maria, but they can never attain it unless the people are ready for greatness. It's you who must hold fast to that vision and make your pupils see it.
Yes, senor. I will try.
In the year 1903, there were were only 450 pupils enrolled in the secondary schools of the Philippine Islands. By 1940, there were upwards of 10,000 public schools with an enrollment of well over 1 million pupils. The moral force that American teachers had tried with such difficulty to instill in the native teachers was a reality. By 1920, a commission could report.
One striking and commendable feature of the present situation is the great faith which the people of the Philippines have in education, the pride which they have in their own schools, and the willingness with which they sacrifice in order to provide instruction for their children.
And a few years later, Manuel Rojas, destined to become the first president of the independent Philippine nation, stated to the Philippine legislature,
I was among those who learned their first ABCs on the knees of American soldiers who came to these shores for the sake of our redemption. I have faith in America. I have faith that America will do what is right in a righteous way.
It would have been difficult for the men who patiently set out to build a new civilization in the Philippines some 50 years ago to realize how well their efforts were to be rewarded. For them, in those early years, there was only chaos, disorganization, and confusion. The finances of the islands were tottering, and merchants were doing business as best they could with five different currencies, the values of each of which fluctuated from day to day. At times, they even found it necessary to cut a coin in two to make change. The Americans substituted one currency, based on gold. Weights and measures differed so widely in various sectors that a yard of cloth purchased in one shop might be 10% shorter than a yard purchased from another dealer. A uniform system was established by law. Unfair trade practices that kept the peasants permanently impoverished and crippled commerce were widespread. A farmer might bring his perishable produce to a port for only one ship call to pick up freight. And frequently he would be told,
I'm sorry, amigo. I've no room on board for any more cargo. We're full up. You'll have to wait for the next boat.
But I cannot wait, senor. My crop, it will spoil. I will be ruined.
Oh, that's too bad, amigo. But look, I'm a kind-hearted sort of a fellow, and I wouldn't like to see you ruined. I'll buy your stuff there for 50 pesos.
50? But it is worth 500 pesos.
Well, by the time the next boat gets here, it won't be worth 1 peso. Now, what do you say? Do you want to sell?
By order of the American governor, any vessel refusing freight will be investigated at the next port of call. If freight space is found to have been available, the captain will be fined double the amount of the freight charge.
Unfair trade practices were curbed, finances put in order, and industry and agriculture encouraged. The result, in 25 years, the export figures for the islands rose from some $30 million to more than $250 million. All along the line, the fight was pushed against ignorance, inefficiency, and corruption. In the campaign against disease,
modern hospitals were installed, vaccination and inoculation instituted. Leprosy and tuberculosis cases were segregated and treated. Death from smallpox declined from several hundred per year before the turn of the century to only one death by the year 1924.
Sanitation.
Manila, with no adequate water supply or sewage disposal system, is given clean water and the best sewage system in the Orient by 1909. Artesian wells ensure pure water for farms. Natives are educated to boil polluted waters. Deaths from cholera, typhoid fever, and amoebic dysentery decline spectacularly.
Transportation.
Modern harbor facilities installed, and the 7,000 islands united for the first time by inter-island shipping. Tram lines, bus lines, railroads constructed. More than 1,000 miles of first-class roads built each year.
Where native governors of the provinces did not cooperate with the road building and maintenance programs, the Americans sometimes resorted to strategy. A party of governors are offered a tour by an American official.
Beautiful scenery, isn't it?
Yes, it is the first time I've seen this part of the country.
Well, we'll see a lot more. Ought to do 300 miles today.
We go so fast.
Averaging about 40 miles an hour. These are good roads.
Eh? Oh, adios. What is happening?
Sorry, we just crossed the line into your province, Governor, and I forgot to slow down. Afraid we won't do 300 miles after all.
But this is disgraceful. I will see that these roads are repaired as soon as I return.
In every field of government, the work of reconstruction went on. Ancient prisons, where diseased and healthy, old and young, were crowded together in filth and misery, were torn down. The diseased were segregated, and the young were given a chance to rehabilitate themselves. Every case was reviewed when the Americans took over from the Spanish authorities.
Next case. Your name?
Pedro Gonzalez, senor.
And your offense?
Damaging government property.
What is your sentence?
Please, Excellency, I have not yet been tried.
Oh? When was your trial due to come up?
I do not know, senor. They tell me it will be soon. For 2 years they have been telling me it will be soon.
What's that? You've been in prison for 2 years waiting trial?
Si, Excellency.
Well, if they'd found you guilty, they'd have given you only 30 days or so, even under their law. Your case is dismissed.
You mean I am free, senor, to go?
Yes, Pedro, you are free.
Holding people accused of minor crimes for years without trial was only one of the many abuses permitted by the Spanish authorities. Convicted murderers were found holding high public office, escaping punishment through bribery and intimidation. These cases were reviewed and the guilty forced to expiate their crimes. The Spanish judicial system was discarded or revived. Under Spanish law, when one man brought suit for damages against another, either party could challenge the appointment of the judge who was to try the case, on the grounds that he was prejudiced.
I challenge the competency of Judge Santos to hear this case on the grounds that he is the friend of the complainant.
Then I will appoint Judge Letran to hear the challenge and determine if Judge Santos is prejudiced.
I challenge Judge Letran on the grounds that he is prejudiced in favor of Judge Santos.
Then I will appoint Judge Tomas to determine if Judge Letran is prejudiced in favor of Judge Santos.
I challenge Judge Tomas on the same grounds. I challenge Judge Rizal. Same grounds.
But, senor, there are no more judges in the islands. You have challenged them all.
In that case, there can be no trial. You must allow my client to go free.
Absurdities and anomalies of the law permitted the conviction of the innocent, while the guilty went free. But the Americans brought more than merely new legal techniques to end the old abuses. They brought a whole new concept of social justice that guaranteed to every man the basic rights of trial by jury, freedom of worship, freedom from slavery, and freedom of thought and of speech. But no mere transplanting of American democratic ideals, of government techniques, and of agricultural and industrial know-how could have availed to improve the lot of the Filipino peoples for any length of time unless they themselves had had the basic capacity for self-government and the willingness to strive for independence through long years of work and patient study and determination to win through to their birthright. Seldom in history has a people living for centuries under a backward and alien rule moved so swiftly toward taking an honored place among the nations of the earth. Within 15 years, the people of the Philippines had advanced so far toward self-government that the success of the American policy was assured, and the United States was able to reiterate and amplify its intention of granting full independence to the island. And by 1934, the United States was able to announce,
"The United States pledges itself to grant outright independence to the Philippine Islands within 10 years. In the 10-year transition period, the Filipinos will have complete control of their internal affairs, while the United States will maintain jurisdiction over foreign affairs only."
In spite of the unrivaled advances made by the Filipino people in a quarter of a century, there was
some who still doubted whether the Filipinos were in fact able or willing to defend their independence if it were given to them. The answer to the skeptics began to come early in 1941 when the Japanese marched into a little village on the island of Luzon and sent a detachment of soldiers into the small one-room schoolhouse.
Who is in charge here?
I am in charge.
Good. You are Filipino? We do not make war on you. Is American in building?
No. There are no Americans here.
Then proceed with quest, please. It is only Americans we fight. But first, it will be necessary for you to remove American flag from stand beside your desk.
I cannot do that.
You must teach these children truth about America. You will not merely remove flag, you will stamp on it.
I should say, it is my duty to teach these children truth. And therefore, I will not remove the flag, and I will not stamp on it.
Pig, do you wish to die?
If I must.
Copperhead, use bayonet. Now, I will remove flag like this. Let's not teach children resistance is futile. The tyranny of the United States in the Philippine Islands has been overthrown. The domination of white man is ended. The Philippine Islands are now one with the greater Asia co-prosperity sphere under moral leadership of Japan.
It could have been. If Americans had built less well, if the Filipinos had learned less well, the Japanese pronouncement might have been the signal for violence and insurrection, the sabotage and wholesale desertion to the enemy. But history wrote the answer in the grim resistance of the Filipinos through long years of Japanese occupation, in the heroic resistance of Bataan, where one-third of General MacArthur's troops were Filipino scouts, first organized some 40 years before to end resistance to American rule. It was blazoned in the deeds of individual men, like Jose Calugas, who was only a mess sergeant with Battery B of the 88th Field Artillery on that morning of January 16, 1941, when the Japanese launched an all-out attack against the defenders of Bataan.
Sergeant Calugas.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Looks like we're in for it. Better keep chow on a 24-hour basis. The men will have to eat when they can.
Yes, sir. Do you think we can hold them?
We've got to, Joe. Those are our orders. We've got to give the infantry time to build a new line in the rear. If the Japs break through now, they'll roll right through the entire army. That's why we're going to catch everything the Japs have got.
She's getting worse.
We'll hold them if we can keep every gun going.
Hey, Lieutenant! That battery's been knocked out! Looks like the crew all got it too!
I was an artilleryman in the scout, sir.
Joe, where are you going?
We need that gun. Going to see what I can do.
Come back, you crazy fool! You'll never make it!
There were 1,000 yards of rolling, heaving ground between Joe Calugas and the knocked-out battery. The earth was tossing under the most concentrated barrage yet let loose upon any part of the Bataan line. But Joe Calugas dashed forward into the inferno and by a miracle arrived unwounded at the position of the ridge where the knocked-out battery lay.
You there. How badly are you wounded?
Oh, I'm okay now. Knocked out for a while. Just my arm.
Get across to the next battery and tell them to send any men they can spare. Got to get this gun back into action.
Okay, Sarge.
You, start packing ammunition.
Yes, sir.
You, see if we can shift this piece out of the crater. Hurry. Got to work fast.
Three days and nights, Joe Calugas kept the battery in action until the line to the rear was completed and the order to retreat was given. And 1 month later, in the headquarters of General Douglas MacArthur...
As personal representative of the President of the United States, and in the name of the Congress, I, Douglas MacArthur, present the Congressional Medal of Honor to Sergeant Jose Calugas for conspicuous gallantry in action, above and beyond the call of duty.
Thank you.
spirit of the Filipino people was forged in the fires of Bataan. Their endurance and determination were bitterly tested in the grim years of Japanese occupation, and it was a nation united in will and spirit that greeted the Americans upon their victorious return. America was ready to redeem her pledge. The State Department opened a school for foreign service officers to train the Filipinos in the one aspect of government the United States had not yet relinquished, foreign affairs. And this July 4th of 1946 came the culmination of the most successful foreign policy yet undertaken by the United States.
I can remember the time when our country fought bitterly against the Americans. I can remember our first faint perception that America was not here to rule, but to teach. I remember the years when we went hand in hand toward the goal of independence. And now that my country is at last mistress of her own destiny, it is my hope and my prayer that we will go forward into the future, hand in hand, two great nations. I was among those who learned their first ABCs on the knees of American soldiers who came to these shores for the sake of our redemption. I have faith in America. I have faith that America will do what is right in a righteous way.